Psalm 71 is a supplication with an abundant amount of praise. The psalmist is an old man and he's pleading for God's help. As an old man, he plays an important role in the community and he senses that he has more to do in carrying out his responsibility to hand on the traditions to the young. I'm sure the grandparents among you will be aware of this kind of feeling. He doesn't complain of sickness, only that his powers are diminishing. People who want to see him dead. And his trust in God and his maintaining of hope as an old man is quite impressive, I think. So that's my understanding of the psalm. You read it and see if it fits. So verse 1 begins. In you, Yahweh, I seek refuge. Do not let me be put to shame forever. In your justice, set me free. Make me safe. Come close to hear me. Save me. Be with me in this dreadful situation, might be another way of putting that. Be a rock of refuge for me, a strong fortress to save me. You can imagine the landscape, and it was very important for them to get behind a rock somewhere away from the arrows with fire on the end of them and all of that. So he's using a military term for protection. You are indeed my rock and my fortress. Straight on to verse 4. Rescue me, O my God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of criminals and the violent. For you, O Lord, are my hope. Hope is a complex word in the Bible. If you read, forget the later Greek works of the Bible, like the Book of Wisdom and Ecclesiasticus and so on, that come after the Greek Hellenizing of this area, and the works that are actually written in Greek, go back to the works that are written in Hebrew that belong to the classical tradition. And in the classical tradition, the word hope always means trust. They're all the words of trust. I trust you. It doesn't mean wanting things in the future to be the way I'd like them, which is quite tricky when you get to English. So the word hope is that word of I trust in you. The Hebrews were very present-oriented people, very hands-on community. So the present was what mattered to them. And that's a good way of putting it. So I now place my trust in you. What happened with the Greek, I hope I'm not telling you too much now, but anyhow, when you go back to the Greek word, elpis, which is the word this is translated here in Greek, when you go back to Greek, it really means when you look to the future, you should be reasonable about it. You should have a rational basis for your anticipation, not chance. This is the philosophers, not chance or the gods or the entrails of birds or, you know, get your head together, and if you're thinking about the future, be reasonable about it, and your estimate of what happens should be something based on reality, not on just dreams or wishful thinking. So that's the Greek. So that when the Greek comes in and joins the Hebrew, and you've got a Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, and you've got the Greek Bible being written, hope gets closer to what we mean by hope. Wanting, it's regarding the future, but wanting something, but based on now, not so much on reasonable basis, but on God. Trust in God is a very reasonable basis for wanting something. So it's got trust in it as well, but the future becomes quite significant and present in the idea. So when you get to the New Testament, and I'll finish this now, when you get to the New Testament and you see the word hope, it's actually quite beautiful. It's a very beautiful virtue. And it's not what you might think it is. They have one word for longing for a future happiness, let's say. And that's quite a beautiful thing to do, longing for heaven. But longing for heaven is not hope. Longing for anything in the future is one thing. Hope is, I'll try and put it very simply for you, it's always in the New Testament concerns the future because of the influence of Greek, unlike the Bible. So it's always to do with the future. But it's not longing for the future, it's trusting the future to God in such a way that we can get on with living the present. The future, in other words, is not something we're fearful of, nor is it something we're kind of looking at and waiting for and anxiously longing for, which, of course, can take your attention away from the present, can't it? If you're all the time living in the future or longing for the future, you mightn't be here. Now, the virtue of hope in the New Testament is so trusting God, which goes right back to the origins of the word in the Bible and in the Psalms here, so trusting in God that the future, which of course you can still look forward to by another virtue, there's nothing wrong with looking forward to it, but it's left in the hands of someone who cares for it completely, so I can now get on, even in a dreadful place, with loving, like Jesus on the cross. He can, instead of being distracted by longing for the resurrection, he's there saying, this day you'll be with me in paradise, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. You follow me, don't you? The focus is on now. The future is something that he can happily, trustingly leave in the hands of his Abba. So it's not an issue for him. I said a lot there, but anyhow, that's... You, O Lord, and Lord there is not Yahweh, or I would have translated it that way, it's Adonai, which technically means Lord. You, O Lord, are my hope. I've placed my trust in you. There it is. That's what it means by being your, my hope. I place my trust in you, Yahweh, from my youth. Upon you I have leaned from my birth. It was you who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of you. I think that's quite beautiful, don't you? Lovely. Psalm 22, which we talked about earlier, the psalm, my God, why have you abandoned me, goes on to say the person in that psalm is wretched, feeling abandoned by God at the depth of being. And then what does the psalmist do? He takes us through a prayer that we should go through when we feel abandoned. He remembers the past. And he says, look, on you my ancestors trusted and you looked after them. He's remembering the Exodus and all. He said, well, you're doing it all for them. Well, why aren't you doing it for me? Why am I being left abandoned when you've got all these miracles that happened to them? And you could hear yourself saying, well, that person's child seemed to be miraculously cured. Why is my child not? That person is in remission, why aren't I in remission? You know, that it's human stuff, isn't it? Why as though God was doing it for that one and not doing it for this one, kind of thing. So that's the kind of prayer, and that's how he feels. So and then he moves, having looked at the past, and it doesn't really help him. He then remembers his own past, which is quite beautiful, and says, here it is, Psalm 22, verse 10, on you I was cast from my birth. Since my mother bore me, you've been my God. Taking us back to the Jewish practice, because everyone knows who the mother is, of course, but the father is more difficult to assess, clearly. So when a little baby was born from the mother's womb, the father, or the one who would accept to be father, it might be an adoption thing, would take the baby, place the baby on his lap and say, he will be called Jesus or Joseph or Nathaniel. In other words, I own this child. Therefore, the inheritance, the name, comes through the male, you know. So all of that was handed on to the child. Well, here's the psalmist saying, from my mother's womb I was placed on your lap, God. And you took me and you said, this is my child. It's beautiful. And that's what the prayer says. And even that doesn't get it. The psalmist, we'll have it again on Friday, won't we? But again, the psalmist is saying, well, where are you? I mean, ever since I was a little, from the first moment I ever opened my eyes, you were my daddy, my Abba, where are you now? So, but our psalmist is a bit similar, but not as poignant perhaps, saying, I've placed my trust in you from my youth, you, God. It was you who took me from my mother's womb, same idea. My praise is continually on you. Verse 7, many look on me as something special, for you're a strong fortress for me. In the parish, if there's any needs, I've been the one they always ring up. And I take Father around for the sick. Or I go to the airport and pick people up, or I look after the sacristy. You know what I mean? They've been all calling on me because I'm a significant person in the parish. God bless you all. This parish has 1,000 significant people. We're spoiled, aren't we? Okay, you are a strong fortress for me. My mouth is full of your praise. I can speak only good of you all day long. So we're dealing with a very fine person who's significant in the community, carrying on the tradition, but is in trouble. Do not cast me off now that I'm old. I can't drive anymore. They've taken my license away. So I can't do the things I used to do, you know. And my kids have left the school, so I'm no longer involved as a parent in that situation or whatever. Don't forsake me now that my strength is spent. For my enemies speak ill of me. Those who want my end conspire together. Why do they want his end? Do they want to inherit the farm? It's a thought. I don't know what. Or they've been jealous of him. Or think of all the human reasons for this. They say God has forsaken him. Pursue him, seize him, there's no one to defend him. Nice types. Oh God, he says, do not stay far from me. Oh my God, come quickly to help me. So when some of you start to feel a bit old, you might like to pray this psalm. I started many years ago, Philip. Here's Psalm 22 again, the one I just referred to. Do not be far from me, trouble is near, there is no one to help me. That's the psalm that they suggest we read when we look at Jesus on the cross. And a bit later in the same psalm, you, Yahweh, don't be far away. Oh, my help, come quickly to my aid. There's a lot of comparisons between this psalm and Psalm 22. Back to Psalm 71, verse 13. Let my accusers be put to shame, there we have it again, and be consumed. Let those who seek to hurt me be covered with scorn and disgrace. I will continue to hope. You could say I'll continue to trust. I will continue to praise you yet more and more. So they're not going to stop me praising you, God. My mouth will tell of your justice, of your saving help all day long. Inadequate as my words are, I will praise the mighty deeds of the Lord Yahweh. I will praise your justice, yours alone. So he's being very faithful and persistent in his faith. A little aside, perhaps Psalm 139 verse 17 reads a little similarly, I think. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God, how vast is the sum of them. I try to count them, they're more than the sand. I come to an end, I am still with you. So, persistently staying with God, even no matter how hard it is. Just a little reflection now from the book of Sirach, which is written in the second century BC. Sirach was obviously an old, wise teacher in later Judaism, still 200 before Christ. And it was his son that wrote this book. His name is Jesus ben Sirach. Jesus, the son of Sirach. So Jesus was a common name, Joshua, I mean, for obvious reasons. And he's in there, he's handing on the wisdom of this lovely old Jewish teacher. By the way, if you read the book of Sirach, about half of it you won't like. Because to be a wise Jewish man in 200 BC wouldn't make a good husband today, I can assure you. It's pretty male-centred and it's, you know, there's a whole lot of... Because the Bible is real people writing under inspiration. I've said it to you 100 times, haven't I? You don't mind. So when real people are writing, real people write. Now, otherwise, who's God going to inspire? Somebody unreal? So if you're going to be inspired, it'll have to be you. It won't be all perfect. But you'll say beautiful things out of God's inspiration, and so will I, but within the limits of my experience and everything else. How else can you talk? So the Bible is human words that come out of prayer and are inspired. But a lot of what's actually said clearly indicates the limited view of the author that's being inspired. Because there aren't anyone else around to inspire except limited beings. Otherwise you've got the idea of inspiration being like as though a human being isn't even there and is like a typewriter and God's pressing the buttons and whatever comes out is from God without going through the brain or feelings of the author. That's, is that all right? That's bizarre. So, here's Sirach, having given him a lovely introduction to you. Chapter 43, verse 28 reads, "Where can we find the strength to praise him? He is greater than all his works. Awesome is the Lord, and very great and marvelous is his power. Glorify the Lord and exalt him as much as you can, for he surpasses even that. When you exalt him, summon all your strength. Don't grow weary, for you cannot praise him enough. Who has seen him? Who can describe him? Who can extol him as he is? Many things greater than these lie hidden, for I have seen but few of his works. For the Lord has made all things, and to the godly," that is those who take God into consideration in their decisions and thoughts and whatever, "he has given wisdom." So there's another old man advising us to keep praising God whatever. Back now to our psalm, verse 17. And we'll just read through the rest of the psalm as it is. It's quite straightforward, I think. "O God, from my youth you have taught me, and I still proclaim your wondrous deeds. Now, in old age and grey hairs, O God, do not forsake me, so that I can proclaim your might and your power to the next generation." He wants to tell his grandkids about all this because they're getting a bit iffy. You know, they're getting a bit straying a bit. And their parents, my son or my daughter's a bit slack the way she's bringing up the kids. We've heard all this before, haven't we? It's been going on forever. But that something of that is in the mind of this old man, and that's great. Grandparents are such a blessing. I only had one, and I hardly ever saw one grandfather. But today it's much more common to have your grandparents around. And what a gift that must be to children, to have these lovely couple who just love them and can hand them back so they're not anxious. But so they're there just loving them, and a wonderful gift. But it would be dreadful if you beautiful grandparents just loved them and didn't hand on the faith to them. How's that? I mean, you know, no, like, you know, and don't muck around. It's too important. Give it to them. Tell them. Remind them. They'll love you for it one day. So, "I can proclaim your might and your power," and don't let people say, "Look, I can pray to God under a tree." Well, of course you can pray to God under a tree. It's irrelevant. I mean, you can love your wife if she's in England for 2 years too. But it wouldn't hurt to meet her every now and then, would it? So, of course you can love God under a tree. But the Eucharist is Jesus coming into our body and our heart and our mind, and we're hearing words that are... And just because the homily isn't too good, well, you can read the newspaper during the homily, for God's sake. What's up with you? It's good if you get a homily as well, but you're going there to receive the Word of God. Okay? However imperfectly communicated through the priest or whoever might be doing it. And you're receiving the word in the word and in the Eucharist. So, and no one can live without that. Don't let them pretend they can. They can't. And if you find your grandchildren or your children really beautiful, though they're not bothering with Mass, imagine how beautiful they would really be if they were also drinking in the words and life of Jesus into their... Our world doesn't encourage it, I know that, and their peers don't encourage it. So there's a million reasons for not doing it, but let us not be one of them. So that I can proclaim your might and your power to the next generation. Your power and your justice, O God, which reach to the heavens, and the great things that you've done, O God, who can compare with you? It's the only thing I like about my own name, Michael. Mikael. Mi is who. Ka is like. El, of course, is God. Mikael is a question. Who is like God? Meaning, no one. So it's a little reminder, nice. Being called after an archangel is no help to me when it comes to... thinking I'd like to be like St. Michael. We can't fly even. What's the good of that? But the name's not bad. It's a bit here. Who can compare with you? You have made me pass through many troubles and calamities. You will once again cause me to recover. You'll bring me back once more from the depths of the earth. Meaning, he's slipping. He's got one foot in the grave, you know? The depths of the earth means the pit where we're buried. And he's been sick before, and he's been crooked before, and he says to God, I reckon you're going to get me a bit longer, and you better, because my grandkids need me. It's all for you, really, God. See, it's a bit of bargaining going on, and good-o. You will increase my honour, and you will comfort me once again. And I, verse 22, I, in my turn, will praise you with the harp. Greek, psalmos. Hence, psalm. I will praise you with the harp for your faithfulness, O my God. I will sing praises to you with the lyre, O Holy One of Israel. My lips will shout for joy when I sing praises to you with all my being, for you have rescued me. All day long, my tongue will talk of your justice, for those who tried to do me harm have been put to shame and disgrace.